In the past 20 years, the Chinese Communist Party has stepped up its internal repression and adopted the so-called wolf warrior diplomacy to make enemies on all sides. Such actions have often puzzled many China observers and analysts. On one hand, some believe that the CCP's intensified repression is a manifestation of its insecurity. On the other hand, they think it's mainly because the CCP authorities feel that with the great development of the Chinese economy, its financial resources have increased so much that it has the capital to do whatever they want, and it has so much confidence that it can't help challenge the existing international order. However, Michael Beckley, the associate professor of political science at Tufts University, have concluded through his years of research that CCP is actually a declining power. Professor Beckley is also a visiting scholar at the American Enterprise Institution. He has studied great power competition, including China's national and military power, for many years. He argues that the CCP's internal control and suppression and external provocations is actually a reflection of a sense of anxiety because it's afraid that it doesn't have much time to come. Professor Beckley, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Right, so you have been researching about China and the United States and China's relationship for a long time. So could you just share with us why you were interested in China in the first place?
Yeah, I got really interested in China, almost two decades ago, primarily because China was this rising superpower on the horizon. I really thought that the world was going to go through this major transition in global power where China was going to eventually overtake the United States, and that this was really the most important story in international relations. And so primarily for that reason, I just thought it's so important, it needs to be studied, and dedicated myself to the study of that transition. I initially thought I was going to be researching, how does one great power sort of share and hand off power to another rising power. Now, my research has taken me in a slightly different direction, but the basic idea was just the rise of China, I felt, was going to be the most important event in world politics this century.
You wrote this book, Unrivaled: Why America Will Remain the World's Sole Superpower, but that's back in 2018. Do you still remain the same opinion now?
I do. So I see China as more of a risen power rather than a rising power. I mean, it's certainly accumulated lots of big power resources, a big military. Its economy is the largest in the world by some measures. It's the world's largest. Nobody lends more money abroad. Its investments span the globe. But China, I think, and what I try to highlight in the book and some of my other research, is China faces a number of headwinds that I think are going to reduce its economic growth rate substantially, are going to confront it with a lot of strategic pushback from the countries, not just in its region, but from around the world. And so a lot of the tailwinds that enabled China's rise, a welcoming globalized economy, a big demographic dividend where China had lots of workers and relatively few elderly people to take care of, lots of resources and a pristine environment, all of those things have really degraded over the last couple of decades, and especially in the last 5 or 6 years. And so even though China is very powerful today, I think in a lot of ways its best days are behind it, and it's going to confront increasing pressures both economically and strategically.
Actually, you are ahead of people, because for so many years, people just think America is declining, China is rising, but back in like 3 years ago, you already foresee what's happening right now, that many countries in the world are resisting the Chinese Communist government. So can you just elaborate a little bit more about how you see China, why it's the best time it's already gone, and what's it's facing right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think if China has been rising for so long that most people just assume it's going to continue to do so. You know, if you were born after 1978, you've literally only known a rising China your entire life. But I think if you step back and look at the rise of China in historical perspective, I mean, the last four decades of rapidly growing prosperity and relative peace, those are kind of anomalous in China's history, especially modern Chinese history. I mean, for a century from 1839, the first Opium War, until the end of the Chinese Civil War in 1949, China is just absolutely ripped apart by foreign imperialist powers. And then even after the country is unified under communist rule in 1949, you know, the United States basically treats China as its enemy number one and tries to dismantle China as a great power. And then after its China's alliance with the Soviet Union falls apart, China becomes the main enemy of both superpowers. So it's not until the 1970s that China finally has this geopolitical holiday, and a lot of it really depended on a good relationship with the United States. The United States paved the way for China's diplomatic and economic integration, especially with, of course, the Western world, and then after the Cold War, the world beyond that. So you had a welcoming environment for China, and as I mentioned just before, for various reasons, China's demography, you know, just the number of workers that it had in its population versus the number of elderly people, was very much stacked in favor of productivity over the last 40 years. That's going to reverse. China was self-sufficient in most resources, water, energy, agriculture. Now China is facing severe resource scarcity going forward. And I would also point out that China's government itself, I mean, you know, after Mao dies in 1976, the Chinese government starts evolving towards a sort of smarter form of autocracy that permits some kind of reform. But now under Xi Jinping, you're seeing a reversal and kind of a slide back into sort of neo-totalitarianism. And that doesn't bode well for long-term, you know, development, long-term economic growth, or for making friends around the world. So just all of these things that really enabled China's rise over the last 40 years are sort of reversing themselves now. And so I think that's one of the reasons why I'm more bearish on China's future outlook than most others.
Why do you think its power, its military, not really as solid as it claims or it is appears?
Yeah, so I think China's military is very powerful close to China's borders. So China has the most diversified missile force in the world. It's got thousands of both cruise and ballistic missiles. It's got, you know, very powerful submarines and ships, lots of combat aircraft. And so if there was a war over Taiwan, for example, which is, you know, 100 miles from the mainland, China could use all of those things without even having to have them leave the Chinese mainland in the first place. So it really packs a very strong punch. But a lot of people say, look, China's military has very strong arms. It has these powerful missiles, but it has relatively weak legs. In other words, it doesn't have the what military strategists call power projection platforms, things like aircraft carriers, things like nuclear powered submarines that can stay submerged and travel vast distances and operate independently for long periods of time. A series of dozens of bases all around the world. Basically all the things that we think of when we think of American military power, the ability to fight wars far beyond your borders. China still lacks a lot of those power projection platforms. And so its military power falls off pretty rapidly once you get beyond 500, 600, 700 miles away from China's borders. Now that could change, you know, decades down the line, but it takes a really long time to be able to operate lots of aircraft carriers around the globe. It takes a long time to develop the base infrastructure. Frankly, the only reason the United States could was because of World War II and just the fact that the United States stayed in a lot of places that it was in World War II. So it's hard to see how China is going to be able to gain that kind of access around the world to truly be a global military power in the same way as the United States. That said, China is a very powerful local military power within East Asia.
South China Sea, how they, you know, to build islands. How do you think the this type of a threat to the United States and the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the South China Sea, obviously it's such a vital waterway, a huge chunk of international trade goes through it. There's been, you know, discoveries of major natural resources, and obviously it's a huge fishing area. And it's also just, you know, a transit route for so many countries that are based around that sea. And China, I think quite smartly, has used measures short of outright military aggression to kind of stake its very expansive claims, which appear to encompass roughly 80% of the South China Sea. And the way China's done that is obviously, you know, building up these artificial islands, sending hordes of fishing ships and Coast Guard ships to basically just take up a lot of space and kind of shove other countries' coast guards and militaries out of the way and their fishing fleets. And even though this is very annoying, it doesn't rise to the level of like outright military aggression. And so it's hard for a country like the United States to respond effectively to that. That said, I still think it's, you know, some people worry that China's going to turn the South China Sea into a quote unquote Chinese lake. I just don't think China has the military power to do that. Lots of parts of the South China Sea are hundreds, in some cases over 1,000 miles away from the Chinese mainland. China, even though it has a large navy, the vast majority of its ships are smaller, you know, frigates, things that are more local and run out of gas, you know, if they stray too far from home. So it's just very hard for China to conquer a big piece of water, a big waterway, and hold that territory. So I don't so much worry about that, but I do worry about, you know, China sort of de facto carving out space for itself in the South China Sea simply by using these non-military tactics.
In your opinion, what's the fundamental reason you believe that China, you know, under CCP's rule, won't be as the superpower as some analysts predicts?
I mean, I think there's two reasons. One is that the gap between China and the United States is actually much larger than most people think. And the reason is most people look at indicators, things like GDP, you know, just the size of the economy, or the trade flows of every country, or the size of the military. And what I've shown in my research is that these measures, they're gross measures. In other words, they count the assets that countries have, but they don't count the liabilities that they have. So it'd sort of be like, you know, looking at someone's wealth just by looking at how much they spend on their credit card, as opposed to like looking at all of their assets and all of their liabilities. And the thing with China is, because it's such a big country, because it has such a big population, it obviously has a lot of assets and generates a lot of activity, both economic and military. But precisely because it's got such a big population, it also has massive liabilities, just feeding, securing, taking care of, cleaning up after, you know, close to 1.4 billion people is enormously costly, and it really ties down and sucks away big parts of China's wealth. And the fact that China is in this very rough neighborhood with, you know, 14 neighbors, many of which are either unstable or hostile towards China or both, China has to maintain this mass army to patrol all of those borders. That also drains away military power that a country like the United States, that only has Canada, Mexico, and two oceans, can devote entirely to projecting military power abroad. So one reason why I don't think China's gonna overtake the United States is simply because when you actually do the math, when you add up all the assets and the liabilities, the United States has something like 3 to 4 times the amount of total wealth that China has. And in terms of its ability to project military power, it's like night and day. I mean, the United States is so far ahead of China in that sphere. The second reason has to do with the things I talked about earlier, simply that China is gonna face these enormous headwinds going forward, demographically, environmentally, and in terms of just the geopolitical environment that it finds itself in. Countries are starting to really push back on China in a way they haven't over the last 20 or 30 years. That's going to make China's rise much more difficult to sustain going forward.
Yeah, to your second point, other countries, how they are seeing China right now, what do you think, what's the main reason that the geopolitical environment just changed, especially just recently?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is obviously COVID, but that's just the most recent thing. I mean, countries obviously blame China for that. They feel like it's been way too secretive, and China's become very aggressive and sort of defensive, I would say, in its diplomacy since COVID. But it obviously goes further back than that. And I think it's two other things. One is that China, especially after, say, 2008, 2009, really started to throw its weight around internationally. You know, it started to militarize big parts of the South China Sea. It has taken on a much more hostile relationship with vis-a-vis Taiwan. It has, we just saw the skirmish with India on their shared border, and that those tensions have actually been rising for a number of years. With something like Hong Kong, you know, it didn't just affect the people of Hong Kong, that China sort of swallowed Hong Kong with this new national security law, but it also, you know, outsiders are saying, look, China is in flagrant violation of treaties that it signed pledging to provide the people of Hong Kong with some semblance of local autonomy. So there's been just a number of foreign policy and domestic policy actions that have conveyed to other countries that China is becoming a much more aggressive country. And at the same time, the second factor is that China, I think, by all measures, has become a much more autocratic, dictatorial, repressive regime. I mean, Xi Jinping has essentially made himself, he's literally named himself president of everything for life. I mean, he's written himself into the constitution. He's purged millions of senior Chinese Communist Party leaders and packed the highest decks of the Chinese government with loyalists to him. And, you know, is not just ruling with an iron fist, but also starting to crack down on ethnic minorities, as we've seen with the Uyghurs being, you know, thrown into re-education centers in Xinjiang and the grid-style management that's going on in Tibet. So I think it's both the foreign policy actions as well as just the fact that China, if anyone thought China was going to sort of liberalize in the future, that dream is gone. And so a lot of countries are saying, wait, this is an aggressive authoritarian state that is making big moves internationally, and some of them are threaten actual violence, whether it's a war over Taiwan, a war in the South China Sea, a war on the border with India. So this is all very concerning to many, many countries around the world.
Looking ahead, Professor Beckley believes that the Chinese Communist Party could become more aggressive in the next 10 years. So what should be the United States strategy? On the other hand, he argues that comparing to the Communist China, the United States still has its unique advantages that it can keep the position of the sole superpower in this century, if used wisely. So what are these advantages? How does he view the polarizing political social environment in our country right now? We'll bring you my continued discussion with Professor Michael Beckley on these issues in the next episode. Please follow our channel. And if you like this video, please click like and share it with your friends or on social media. Thank you for watching and have a nice weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.